My friends, I greet you this morning in the name of Jesus, who is the Christ. We all love stories, don't we? And the prodigal son is one of those stories that most people know, even if they're not Christians. But today I'm going to tell another story, a different story. I've never really done this for a sermon before, but I just saw such similarities in a movie that I wanted to share that with you. So hopefully you can see them too. The movie is called Ben is Back, starring Julia Roberts. And if you have not seen it, this is a spoiler alert. And if you have seen it, again, think of it as kind of a metaphor for the story that I would call The Prodigal Mom. Ben arrives home unexpectedly for Christmas. He is coming from his drug rehabilitation center, and he tells his parents that he has been doing so well that they let him come home for Christmas. The truth is, he's been kicked out of the rehabilitation center. His two young half-siblings are delighted to see him because Ben is, you know, one of those guys that just doesn't forget how to be a kid. His mom is surprised, and she jumps out of the car and runs to hug him. But Ben's teenage sister rolls her eyes, pulls out her cell phone to inform her stepfather that Ben is back. Ben tells his parents that, so what we begin to see as the story unfolds is that there was some kind of trouble last Christmas when he was home. And the parents agree that he can stay for 24 hours as long as his mom keeps eyes on him every minute. And we watch as Ben lies and manipulates his way through those 24 hours. Lucas Hedges masterfully portrays the painful struggle of an addict between loyalty and love for his family on one hand and emotional and physical addiction. His mother takes him to the mall, as any mom would do, to buy him some nice clothes to wear to the Christmas Eve service. His sister's going to sing a solo. And when he heads for the fitting room, she leans close to him and searches his pockets. As she does so, she whispers in his ear, "This is love." When they're at the mall, they see people they know. Some of them are Ben's old school chums. One is a pretty shady character. We learn that Ben became hooked on oxycodone when a doctor kept prescribing the pain pills after a snowboarding accident. As the family walks up the aisle on Christmas Eve, they receive glares from a woman sitting in the pew. Roberts goes over to talk to her and to console her. It is this woman's first Christmas without her daughter, Ben's former girlfriend, who apparently died of an overdose last Christmas. The children come up and innocently present the nativity story. Everyone smiles as the teenage sister beautifully sings, "O Holy Night." When the family arrives home afterward, they see that the house has been broken into. Ben is terribly upset and runs around the house assessing the damage. He comes back to report that nothing is gone. TVs, computers, even the Christmas gifts, everything is still there. "We must have scared them off," he proclaims. But then his sister notices that their beloved little dog, Ponzi, is gone. They all start calling for him. "Ponzi, Ponzi." There are no barks of reply. The younger children begin to cry. Ben immediately recognizes the work of his former drug companions. to whom he owes a lot of money. He runs angrily out of the house to find them, but soon his mom follows in the car. She begs him to get into the car, and she will not take no for an answer. She will drive him to all his old haunts to look for the dog. Her eyes are opened wide as they set out on their Christmas Eve mission. The first stop is at the home of Ben's former history teacher. It turns out the teacher's elderly mother had cancer and an abundance of OxyContin. Ben would do certain favors for the teacher in exchange for drugs. The teacher seems pleased to see him, but he doesn't have the dog. Next, they arrive at a sleazy bar where Ben finds an old friend from high school. Ben chases him outside and begins to beat him up right in front of his mother. The other young man is clearly an addict. He finally gives up the location of their former dealer. "He'll kill me," he cries, while he politely calls Ben's mom, Mrs. B. "You look awful," she says to him. "I used to be friends with your mother. I changed your diapers. Call your mother and at least tell her you're alive." They stop to get gas. Ben fools his mother into looking for some special drink that he wants for him, rushes out the door, and takes a car. He's tried to tell her that the journey has gotten too dangerous. She's stranded then in the store. She doesn't want to call the police and have Ben go to jail. What to do? Well, finally she winds up on the doorstep of his dead girlfriend's mother, the one that was distraught in church. She gives Roberts a package. It contains Narcan, an antidote for overdose. It's out of date, but maybe it will work if she needs it. Then she hands Roberts the keys to her car. "Find him before it's too late," is the message. As Roberts squeals out of the driveway, she realizes she doesn't know where to go next. She ends up in the worst part of town. She gets out of the car, and another mother, a black woman, is sitting on a street bench. And she tells Roberts, "Look over there," pointing under the bridge. That's where most of them wind up. Frightened but determined, Roberts goes searching. She discovers the very dregs of life: zombie-like men, women, and children attempting to stay warm on a cold winter's night. She goes back to her car after not finding Ben, and she's in tears when her daughter calls. The daughter's worried about her mother. She's angry at her brother for getting her mom into such a horrible mess. But Roberts won't give up. So the daughter decides she'd better help her brother if she wants to get her mom back. And so she says she can help by tracking Ben's car on her computer. Well, meanwhile, Ben finds his old dealer. He hears Ponzi barking in the other room. The dealer gives him one more job to do, and he tapes a large package of drugs around his chest and sends him to a still more threatening place. There are guns everywhere, but Ben manages to complete his mission and delivers the drugs. He's exhausted but relieved when he comes back to the dealer to deliver the money that was owed. As a reward for a job well done, the dealer gives him a small packet of drugs. Roberts just misses him at the dealer's shop, pawn shop, and is finally so desperate she decides to call her husband for help. She does go to the police station and pleads for the police to arrest her son for stealing her car. But she never gives up. Then the phone rings. In the last scene, she finds Ponzi safe and sound in her car, parked at the side of a road. It is Christmas morning. She's had no sleep. She opens a car door, and Ponzi jumps out and leads her to an old barn nearby. Weeping, she climbs the stairs to the hayloft, and there she finds her son lying on the floor, pale as a ghost. Nervously, she finds the Narcan out of her pocket. She fills it and she places it in his nostrils, all the while praying that it will still work. There is no response. She administers CPR, trying desperately to breathe the life of God back into her son. Still, no response. Then we hear a sound. Ben is sucking in air. He takes a breath, his eyes flutter, and it all begins again. The mother's love in this story is the love of our God. Extravagant, foolish, prodigal love. You see, prodigal means over the top, ridiculous. And that's the kind of love that God has for us. Love that goes to extremes. Searching, relentless, even when we can't be counted on, even when we lie and make excuses, even when we get ourselves into deep, dangerous trouble. Over and over again, God welcomes us back and gives us another chance. God will not give up on us. This is love. God whispers. God will give everything to save us. God even gave God's own son. Because of his love, we breathe new life again. And we are home.